Today, you may notice I don't have a jacket on today, and it's because the insurance company took all of our clothes except for one jacket, and that jacket is now safely in the hands of my dry cleaner that I didn't pick up on Friday. So. And I also forgot the power cord for my computer, so once the computer goes out, the sermon's over. So it's just one of those days. But we're going to continue our study this morning in the book of James, James chapter 3. And today we'll be talking about two different kinds of wisdom. Imagine if I ask everybody to, if I ask the question, who wants wisdom? Everybody here would probably raise their hand. I would hope that everybody would raise their hand, certainly. And when we look at the Old Testament wisdom literature, we're encouraged to seek after wisdom. And likewise, the New Testament also, in Ephesians chapter 5, exhorts us all to walk with wisdom. And so, I probably have not ever met anybody who would say that they were not interested in having wisdom. Nobody wants to be a fool. No one wants to be, certainly does not want to be perceived as being a fool. So we do seek after wisdom and should. But James points out here that sometimes people do not seek after the right kind of wisdom. And sadly, that's usually what people care about is wisdom that is not the kind of wisdom that James points out here that we ought to. So, we sometimes seek after things because we're concerned about the way that we look. It may be the clothes that we wear, the car that we drive, or whatever it might be. And so we care about, what we look like. I remember, when I was right out of college, had a car accident and had temporarily had an old jalopy that I was driving. And my boss, that for the newspaper I was working for, that I was selling advertising, he said, "This does not really give a good perception of your successfulness," and he was right. It certainly didn't, and it was not a car that I had for a long time, because it had it. If you liked a certain paint color, it had it, because every piece of it was different. But it was not something that gave that perception that you want. So we're sometimes concerned about perception, and we care about what people's perceptions are of us. But what James points out here is that you really shouldn't be too concerned about what people perceive you as. I mean, it's important in some areas, but really what's more important is what God thinks of you, how God perceives you. And so do we care about what God thinks of us? Do we care about being foolish in the eyes of God? And James is going to point out to us here that we are frequently seeking the wrong wisdom, and he's going to teach us that there are two kinds of wisdom, heavenly wisdom versus earthly wisdom. And so he points out to us here in verse 13 where he says, "Who is wise and understanding among you? By his good conduct let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom." And we've seen before in the book of James that James does talk a lot about works. He talks a lot about action. We talked last week about the tongue. And one of the points that he made about the tongue is that with the tongue you can bless and curse, and you should not be having those things that are opposite coming out of the same mouth. James also talks about the living in such a way that is consistent with the way that you talk. And so James here begins with a question. He says, "Who is wise and understanding among you? Do you have wisdom and understanding?" And so that tells us if you think you have wisdom and understanding, it's not just enough to think that you have it. He says if you think that you have it, it needs to be shown in action. So James is asking us to evaluate whether or not you really have that. So to state it more sharply, to prove that you have wisdom, or more accurately, which wisdom that you have, it's going to be proven by the things that you do. It's going to be shown by your actions. And so James is telling us to evaluate. Do you know what's right? But not only do you know what's right, but are you doing what is right? Are you practicing what is right through good conduct? So good conduct is inevitably the outgrowth of true wisdom. And wisdom is revealed by the way that you live your life. And so when he says, by his good conduct, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. So if you have wisdom, it's not going to be something that's locked away in your brain that nobody else can see. It's going to be shown in the way that you live your life. And not only are you to have good conduct, but he says we are to practice this conduct in meekness. And we've discussed the word meekness before. It's the Greek word prautes, and it's fairly complicated and a multifaceted concept. And it's one of these words that's hard for us to understand it, because we usually think of weakness or quietness when we think of meekness. But the Bible Dictionary of Greek Words says the quality of not being overly impressed by a sense of one's self-importance. So you're not overly impressed with yourself, and that's meekness. And some translations use the word humility to explain the concept. And really, there's more to it than just what we would think of as humility. The Greeks would think of this as people who are gracious and mild, and sometimes the word is gentle is being used. And when the Greeks used the word gentle, they often thought of a gentle voice or a gentle animal. And furthermore, the word that the Greeks would use would be representative of an animal that's been broken, an animal that's been trained, like a horse that's been bridled, as James has already used that illustration. So I think that's really good for us to understand it in that context, in that kind of terminology. When we think about a horse that's been broken, you think about something that has great power, right? You think about something that has been tamed and it is under control. And James talked about the tongue being something that's full of fire and full of energy, but like a ship and a rudder and a horse with a bridle, it's something that has great force and great power, but can be kept under control. And when you think about meekness in this kind of terminology, it's easy to see that in the life of Christ, because Christ had great power, but he kept it under control. And that's probably one of the most notable things that we can see about Christ, is we know what he was able to do. We know who he was and what power that he had, yet when he was provoked, he didn't retaliate. And so when the Greeks used this word, they meant power under control. And so when you think of meekness, that it carries the ideal of humility and gentleness and mildness, not because of some weakness, but because there is power and strength and it has been placed under control. And so that's what a wise person is going to do. A wise person is going to keep control, just as we saw as they should do with their tongue. It should be a part of their life, that they have power, but it's placed under control. The writer of Proverbs makes a similar point, Proverbs chapter 11 and verse 2. It says, when pride comes, then comes disgrace, but with the humble is wisdom. So you think about that. You know, just think about what that means. When pride comes, then comes disgrace. Well, why would that be so? Well, pride is usually going to mean that somebody is going to take control, or they're going to defend themselves, or they're going to not take it very well if they are challenged. But when pride comes, then comes disgrace. So a prideful person is going to usually react in the wrong way because of their pride. And so with the humble, the one that has power, that has control of that power, is the one that is showing wisdom. So James really challenges us here again in very practical terms, as we've said before. In our relationship with God, he says, is shown in our works. It's shown, if we have wisdom, if we think we have wisdom, then show it. Show it in the way that you live. Our relationship with God is shown by the life
that you live. And so just
as the works that we saw in James chapter 2 show us what kind of faith we have, our works also here show us what kind of wisdom we have. Do you have heavenly wisdom or do you have earthly wisdom? What kind do you have? And he goes on and fleshes out this point as we go along here in verses 14 through 16. And so if we want to know what are the attributes of this wisdom that he is talking about, he is going to point out what the attributes are and where their origins are. In verses 14 through 16, but if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. This is not the wisdom that comes from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder in every vile practice. And so the first thing that he is warning us about is this wisdom of the world. He says, number one, it's not from above. It's earthly. It's worldly. It's according to the world standards. And so he's showing us what the wrong wisdom looks like. And he says, if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not be boast and be false to the truth. So this is not the wisdom that comes from above. It's unspiritual. It's demonic. And he says, there will be disorder in every vile practice. If you have envy and jealousy and selfishness in your heart, do you have wisdom? You don't have the right kind of wisdom. You don't have the wisdom that comes from above. You are false to the truth, he says. So you are claiming to be wise, but if you are living in this way, you're really denying the claim. You're claiming something that you can't claim because you're not living in that way. So acting with jealousy, acting with envy shows what about you?
It shows that you don't have godly wisdom.
It shows that you have earthly wisdom. And again, you see how these attributes are in contrast to the meekness that we just talked about. This is the opposite of a person that is meek, that has strength but is controlled, would react. The person that's jealous and envious and strifeful and has selfishness in their heart, are they going to react in a godly way? Again, what is said about meekness is the quality of not being overly impressed
by your sense of self-importance.
And so these attitudes, where do they come from? Envy and jealousy. Where do they come from? They come from having a sense of self-importance. You know, I'll just tell on myself for a second. There's somebody that within my company that I'm pretty competitive with. And it's because, and I feel competitive with him because I know he feels competitive with me. And every month we get a list. It's called a stack ranking, and it shows, you know, who in the company is meeting their quota. And you know what I do when I look at that? I instinctively look for his name to see where we are in the list. Because why do I do that? Because I know he's doing it. I know he's looking at it to see if his name is above mine or below mine. And, you know, shouldn't do that. It shouldn't really matter. Has zero effect on my compensation where the two of us are ranked on that list. Has zero effect on my life whatsoever, except right here. Envy and jealousy. Those things ought not to be so. So where do envy and jealousy and selfish ambition come from? James says they come from not being humble, not having humility. And these attitudes, you come from seeing others receive what we think we ought to have. And worldly wisdom says, I'm going to take care of myself. And worldly wisdom says, I deserve this. Or I demand this. I demand respect. I deserve attention. And we see that a lot today, don't we? People get so upset if they don't get the attention that they think that they ought to receive. Or some, you know, they feel like they have not received something or some respect that they think that they ought to have received. And this is what the world teaches us. The world teaches us to see how many friends you can have. How many people do you interact with on the internet? How much attention do you get? I was telling Jarrell yesterday, I posted, all I do on Facebook is post sarcastic pictures usually. And I told her that when I posted yesterday, sure did get a lot of likes, sure got a lot of attention. So that means something, doesn't it? Not really. The world teaches us that how many people like you, how many people respect you, how many people know your name. But James is condemning this kind of thinking.
This selfish ambition,
jealousy, and envy. James says that this wisdom is not from above. It's earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. And so when we act like this, what are we acting like? Are we acting like Christ? Are we acting like people of the world? So when James says it's earthly, it means it's worldly. It's according to the world standards. And when he says it's sensual, it's appealing to the senses. It's appealing to the passions. It's appealing to emotions. We're no longer thinking godly. We've limited our vision. We've limited our thoughts to the things of the earth. We're ignoring the riches of heaven, and we're thinking about things that are temporary. Paul used similar language in Romans 8. Verse 7, he said, "For the mind that is set on the flesh is hostile to God, for it does not submit to God's law." Indeed, it cannot. He's saying that we should not be having worldly things. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 1 says, "But I, brothers, could not address you as spiritual people, but as people of the flesh. As infants in Christ, I fed you with milk, not solid food, for you were not ready for it. And even now you are not yet ready. For you are still of the flesh, and while there is jealousy and strife among you, are you not of the flesh and behaving in a human way? For when one says, I follow Paul, and another, I follow Apollos, are you not merely being human?" And when you think about that situation where people said, I follow Paul, and another, I follow Cephas or Apollos, what are they doing? They're ranking themselves. That I was baptized by this person, I follow this person. And he says that we don't need any of that. You're looking at life not through a godly standard, but through a worldly standard. And that's not right. And finally, James calls this worldly wisdom demonic. And we referenced that in class this morning and last week when we talked about the faith of demons. So the kind of wisdom possessed by the devil and his angels. That's not something you really want to be compared to, is it? If you have the wisdom of the world, it's not spiritual, it's demonic. That's quite a statement that you think you're of God when you act like this, you're not of God, you're demonic, you're of the devil.
And that's very strong language that James is using here. You're one or the other. And if
you're not using heavenly wisdom, you're using worldly wisdom, then you're of the devil.
So he's telling us, stop lying to yourselves. You have to get
this point that godly wisdom is not the wisdom of the world,
that godly wisdom is nothing like the wisdom of the world. And in verse 16, he describes it even more. He says,
"For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder in every vile practice." We certainly see the truth of that teaching, don't we? Have you ever known where jealousy and envy and selfish ambition reign? For that really is a great work environment, isn't it? That's a great family dynamic when everybody is selfish and envious of one another. Does that help a family? Of course it doesn't. Does it help a
congregation when people are butting heads with one another because they're envious and selfish?
We can see that it never leads to anything
good. And that's exactly what James says.
When you have that, you're going to get this. When you have envy and selfishness, what are you going to get? You're going to get disorder. chaos, every vile practice.
And so we see the truth in that teaching.
We see crime increase. Why does crime increase? Because people are responding to the gospel? Is that why crime increases? Certainly not. It's because people are ignoring the teachings of God and they are rejecting God. Rejecting God does not make us more civilized. And you hear people today that would teach you that, you know, what we need to do to have peace is that we need to reject God. And they make religion be the source of strife. And it's not. These are those that are rejecting wisdom that comes from above and accepting a self-centered life. And when that happens, our lives become more and more wicked. Rejecting God does not make us more civilized, as much as some want to claim that. Families will become disorderly. They will become broken. Relationships will be damaged. Society will become more destructive as people focus on themselves and stop focusing on God. They make a mess of their lives. They make a mess of other people's lives. As long as we remain selfish and reject heavenly wisdom, that's what the result is. And that's what James is saying. Wherever this earthly wisdom, the wisdom of the world, is reigning, then you're going to have disorder and chaos. But we don't have to stop there. We can see the better part, and that's wisdom from above in verses 17 and 18.
The wisdom from above is first pure, then
peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere, and
a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace.
And so,
Heavenly wisdom
is from above.
Obviously, it comes from God.
And you see the contrast here in the nature of these two types of wisdom. The wisdom from the earth, the earthly wisdom, is about power and position and prestige and privilege. You know, that's what causes the envy and self-seeking. And that certainly is the demonic kind of wisdom. But the wisdom that is from above, he shows us the characteristics of that as well. First of all, he says that it's pure. What does that mean? Well, it's going to be pure according to God's word. It's going to not compromise truth for the sake of peace. It is going, you know, the first characteristic here above all else is purity. And a pure life is one that is obedient to godly wisdom. And really nothing shows that a unfaithful life or a wisdom from below as living a life of impurity. And so if we think that we have wisdom and understanding but are leading an impure life, you know, straddling the fence, trying to lead a double life, it's a life of impurity. And we're not being pleasing to God, even if we fool a bunch of other people. Why would we do that? Sometimes people do things because they're more concerned about the way they appear to others than they appear to God. But when we listen to the people of the world who lead impure lives, that is really foolish to listen to their instructions. Pure living shows that you have godly, spiritual wisdom. Verse 17 here is very interesting. It says, but the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. And so this is showing us three characteristics that describe the wise person's disposition. First of all, this wisdom comes from above. When it comes from above, it's the opposite of what we saw before. It's not destructive. It's not unspiritual. And it's going to be peaceable, gentle, and open to reason. And you compare that to what we saw before. Is the person that's selfish and envious and jealous, are they open to reason? You know, generally not. Are they peaceable? Do you put envy and jealousy and peaceable in the same blender and it all comes out all right? No. Those with wisdom from above are teachable. They have power under control. They are gentle and they're humble. And they listen to others. So these qualities reveal the wise person's actions. And James says those with godly wisdom are full of these things. They're full of mercy. They're full of good fruits. And so these qualities really describe very well the wise person's disposition. They're also peaceable. Those that love peace don't throw away the truth for the sake of peace, but they make every effort, as Paul said in Romans chapter 12, they make every effort to be at peace with all. And the best way to do that is to have a standard. And have a standard of truth. Holding firm to the truth. And being gentle. How do you be gentle? Well, that's being kind in your dealings with others and not harsh. And being willing to yield. Being full of mercy. Quick to forgive the offenses of others. And certainly, treating others the way that you would like to be treated. And treating others mercifully. And producing good fruits. And so these characteristics describe the wise person's action. And we can't have the wisdom of God and not put these things on. So you have to ask yourself, is my life one that shows that I'm full of mercy? If somebody was describing you, would they describe you as one that's full of mercy or one that's full of jealousy and envy? So go back to what James said at the beginning of this chapter. What did he say? He said, if you think that you have wisdom, then you have to show it. It has to be something that's active in your life. Where is your good conduct? Where are the merciful acts? Where are the good fruits? And so you think about these things. It's not just enough to think, well, in your head, I'm full of mercy and good works. But then it does not show up anywhere in our actual life. James also tells us that we are to be impartial and sincere. New American Standard reads unwavering and without hypocrisy. And I think that's a good thought that a Christian is not wavering. That means that not going to go one way or the other and not be consistent when there's challenges. A Christian is not fake and not hypocritical. Christians are sincere and they're true in their actions. And that's in contrast to the double-minded man that James has already pointed out in other places. In what did he say in James 1? The double-minded man is very stable. Now, that's not what he said. He said the double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. When I think about when you're coming, I don't know why I care so much about running over a squirrel, because when they get in my attic, all I want to do is blast them out of there. But when I see them on the road, I make every effort I can not to run over one. And they just seem sometimes that they want me to run over them because they can't decide which way they're going to go. Everybody's experienced that, right? They're so spastic that you don't know what they're going to do, where are they going to go, and you just have to stop in the middle of the road and wait for them to decide. And when I think about how James describes this unstable man, this double-minded man, the one that can't decide if he's going to serve God or the devil, he has no stability. He's just running one way and running the other and unstable in all his ways. And that's what we're like if we're not serving God and we're trying to decide, what am I going to do? Am I going to serve God or serve the God? You're unstable in all your ways. The double-minded man. And so the fruit of these qualities that we see here, the righteousness sown in peace. James said in chapter 1, the anger of man does not promote or produce the righteousness of God. And we noted that that meant that our anger does not produce the righteous living that God wants from us. And here in James chapter 3, we see it fleshed out even more, that this wisdom from above is one that we can infer that controls their tongue and doesn't produce anger, but is also pure and peaceable and open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering and sincere. And when you do that, what are you producing? Well, you're producing the righteousness that God would have us to have. And that righteous living
comes to those who make peace. In contrast to that earlier point, that worldly wisdom, what does that lead to? Does it lead to peace? No, it leads to disorder.
It leads to every vile practice. Listening to the wisdom of God leads us to a righteous life that God wants us to have. So earthly wisdom, it causes confusion. It causes every evil thing. I wonder what kind of wisdom caused denominationalism. I wonder what kind of wisdom causes brethren to be upset and angry with one another. Heavenly wisdom, it produces peace instead of confusion. Heavenly wisdom bears the fruit of righteousness instead of every evil thing. So when you contrast these two things, which one do you want? You know which one James tells us that we should want, because one's demonic and one's not. So it's pretty easy choice there, right? Pretty easy choice to choose God or the devil, or it should be. But James is saying you are making a choice. You're making a choice and showing your choice by the way that you live. Not by what you're thinking, but what you are doing. So which wisdom is leading your life? Are you following the wisdom from above or from below? So if it's earthly, that's so easy. There's not really any effort. It does not require any effort to do that. If you want to be envious and selfish, you don't have to have anybody teach you how to do that. It's just there, isn't it? Just do whatever the world tells you. Just do whatever feels right, and then you can follow the earthly wisdom. But if it's heavenly, then you're going to have to do more work. You're going to have to seek that from God. You're going to have to exercise that humility, that power under control, just as we have to apply what we saw last week in regard to controlling our tongue. It has a lot of power, but it needs to be controlled. So it's easy to know which one you're following, because you look at your life, you look at your conduct, you look at your character, you look at your attitude, look at your reputation. And if you have jealousy, envy, selfish ambition, and you think that you are following God or following heavenly wisdom, then James says you're really lying to yourself. But those who follow God show it in their conduct, in a life that's full of purity, peace, gentleness, mercy. And so then we have the righteous life that God demands from you. This is just another in the series of James hitting us pretty hard with things that we know that are pretty simple to understand, but as my dad always said, it's a lot easier to preach it than it is to live it. And we need to read it, we need to understand it, and we need to obey it. But let's take these things and these very practical lessons that James gives us and pattern our life after God's will. If we can help you in any way this morning to do that, to be obedient to the gospel of Christ, I invite you to come while we stand together and sing.